Yeah, I'm kind of curious where, like, if we also, if we can use the archives in, as a way you say, like, to break free from, you know, recurring narratives and find something new from the past that we can kind of use for the future. I wonder if this is also possible with AI, with such a kind of powerful tool, which indeed is problematic, but I don't know, I don't have yet an answer for that.
We are again. Hopefully you can hear us. Yes, I think so. And welcome back. Took a while. We needed a coffee. We have to be honest on this. Also different group. This is going to be a long live. You're going to be a different setup every time. Before jumping to our next guest, Carlo, Carlo De Gaetano. I think I'm going to give you an introduction before you're going to give an introduction to them, to what this is and where we are, and just to make you a bit comfortable and drinking the coffee in the meantime. So this is a pop-up TV studio. The idea is that it's both an event and an offline and an online event, but at the same time is also a recording session, and at the same time is also pure experimentation of setups. So what you can see here in front of us, you have like the control room. There is a camera there that is removing the background, and inside the background there is the desktop, and inside the desktop there is a 2004 camera. Yes, a webcam from, yeah, it's I found it in my parents' house. So I actually have no idea which year it is, but like there was. And then people can see the final output, that is that little rectangle there that you can see there, over there. And the idea is that if you want, but you don't have to, you can also like push buttons a bit. Yes, I'm gonna explain. So the idea is that we would like to experiment a bit also with collaborative editing. Well, it's very limited, but I think there are some options. So here we are, the three of us plus the background. But then if you press cut or auto, you switch to the full background. You can decide if you want to have this ugly camera that is very... Actually, I think we are not with that camera. Let's see. Oh, yes, it is. And then you're going to put some background with some of your work from online. But you can also Google things if you come into your mind. Feel free to use the laptop as your own laptop. So it's not much. It's just full screen. So just if we want to go back to us. Is program is what is live, preview is what potentially is live. So if press cut, preview goes to program and is going to be streamed. It's very straightforward, but don't feel pressured. But it's very chill. Like we just want to give a bit of possibilities, but we don't have to do them. Okay, I'm gonna take this. I want to put some videos in the background. If they go. Sorry. I think you're familiar a bit with this, but maybe it makes sense that for the audience you explain who you are and why are you here at Remix Festival.
Yeah. So, well, hi everyone. I'm Carlo De Gaetano, and first a small introduction about who I am and what I do. So I have a background as a visual designer, and I then specialize more into information design and data visualization in the last years. And now I'm working at the Visual Methodologies Collective, where we are currently focusing on two main themes. The first one is climate imaginaries, where we explore, first off, we actually, it's a long story, this program, and it started by studying how climate change was represented through images online in social media. And then now it's becoming more how we can use visual and participatory methods to let people engage with and think about the future of the future living with climate change. And the second strand of research is senses of belonging, which is more connected to the city, the citizen or place attachment. And also there we experiment with participatory methods and like photo voice, for example, to engage people in understanding and showing us where do they belong and why, and where do they don't. And why. And I'm here now at the Remix Fest because I'm hosting a workshop that's called It Happened Tomorrow, Reflections on Water, which is actually the third iteration of this workshop, where basically I curated together with colleagues at the Visual Methodologies Collective a special collection of audiovisual collection from the Sound and Vision Open Archives about water in general and relationships with it, like both human relationships or interspecies relationship. So we have this collection of 400 videos, that the one that I sent to you. And what we are trying to do is try to reuse parts of this collection as a sort of material, visual material, to elicit people to think about the future. So use these traces of the past to think about how alive in a future with a changing climate might feel like or look like. And we did that. We did this the first time at the Society 5.0 festival in Amsterdam, and then we exported it in Rome at a visual method conference. And now is the third time that I'm presenting this with Rasa Bocke, and a researcher at the Sound and Vision. Yeah, and it's first off, it's a drawing exercise. It's quite relaxing, actually. It's very good to do at the end of the day, because
I hear there is some music.
Yeah. We also play some music as a background. We actually, I'm very much in love with the concept album of Seven Waves by Suzanne Chani, which is an album that to me at least speaks about the water and the ocean. And it was very also very helpful for me during the pandemic to kind of hanging in there. So I decided to try it while I let participants drawing. And how it works, it's very simple. Should I explain a little bit?
If you want, yes.
So as you see here, these are still images from the videos that I collected that are printed on a blank A4. And people are actually invited to come in the room and browse the images and try to imagine or feel which one reminds them of a place they are familiar with, like could be a home or their school or just maybe a city or a landscape. It's not very strict. And then they pick one, and then they start drawing using that starting still frame as a visual prompt. And we just prompt them with a very open question, like, okay, try to think about how that place might look like in 100 years from now with higher waters, and what's happening there, who else is there, and which kind of also maybe adaptation strategies there are in place, or which kind of different kind of relationships might happen in that place, not also between humans, but also with other species. And so you see here some of the examples from the first iteration, and it's quite, yeah, it's quite a relaxing thing. Jordi, you were there. I think so. You are here, actually.
I didn't know that you were part of the workshop.
You have nice. A different haircut.
Wait, let's switch. This is Jordi.
A fast haircut.
Yeah. yeah, so the first part is indeed was it's more just activating a different part of the brain and the mood, just to get into this imagination exercise. And the second was more about experimenting with generative AI to bring the speculative landscape to life together and discuss commonalities and differences. But actually this part was a bit of a, I don't know, gave mixed results. Because for some it was fun, but we weren't really sure what the AI did add to the conversation or to the imagination process. And this is kind of a question that I'm still struggling with. So when does this tool like generative AI, like Midjourney or DALL-E, help or allow us to kind of be more free in the imagination process, and then when then they become frustrating and they just block the imagination, so.
But could we say this also for archives as well?
Yeah. Yeah, indeed, exactly. One of the problems that why we started this whole, let's say, research on engaging people in imagination exercises, because there is kind of a crisis of imagination now related to climate change. And part of it is because, we've been, let's say, subject to a lot of communication about it, a lot of visuals for years, and people are just fed up, and there is like this apocalypse fatigue where they just say, okay, even if I'm well-intentioned in engaging with a conversation, I just, it's too much. On the other side, there is also a call for artists, writers, and all sorts of creatives to engage more with the topic in their artistic production, and to bring climate more at the core of what they do with the work of fiction as well. So indeed, archives and images can have be like a double-edged sword. So they can prompt you to think about something different, but we had experiences of participants in this workshop where they say, okay, I'm looking at these images from the past and I can only think about gloom, and I can only imagine landscapes where everything is underwater, or we didn't manage to enter in a place where it's actually okay.
But I think, I was in the workshop last year, and I agree that, like, I think generative AI didn't add much other than what we were already imagining by ourselves drawing on the pictures. But I think archives, like exploring the archive, does add a lot I also have this feeling that there's a lack of imagination, but I think that imagination cannot come from nowhere. It has to come from somewhere. And I feel like archives are a place where we can basically, there's at least a chance to discover something that we have not seen, or that things might have been different in a different period of time. And I feel like a generative AI does the other way around. It kind of only reproduces cliches and common places that we're already well acquainted. Do you have any thoughts around this?
Yeah, I kind of agree with you. I'm not sure about the second point of replicating cliché, which is, of course, a slippery slope, because indeed also generative AI is based on archives. So they kind of, yeah, as you say, reproduce biases, and they have a lot of issues about representation. And but yeah, I'm kind of curious where, like, if we can use the archives in, as a way you say, like, to break free from you know, recurring narratives and find something new from the past that we can kind of use for the future. I wonder if this is also possible with AI, with such a kind of powerful tool, which indeed is problematic, but I don't know. I don't have yet an answer for that.
I have a question.
Yes.
Sorry. You said that this workshop was held both in the Netherlands, but also outside, right? In Italy, in this case.
In Rome, yeah.
And I guess different archives were used.
Yeah.
Or because that's also one of the characteristics of archives, that kind of are not all the time, but they're kind of localized, both physically in a space, but also localized for the kind of images, audio, or like object that they archive. And in that sense, I think AI as well, right? Like the archive of an AI, it's specific, it's localized as well, right? So in that sense, I think the question is, did you notice differences between, you know, like the use of these two different archives, the one in Rome, the one in the Netherlands? And I think my point is probably like we should look at these archives of the AI as well and try to understand where are they localized and what they are, you know, what do they refer to, in order to kind of answer a bit this tension that I think it came up before. So I guess the very practical question is, did you find differences between the use of the archive in the Netherlands from people that, I guess, live here?
So I wish I had, but...
nope.
Because, no, actually, the idea was that in Rome also to include, to use images from Europa Rana collection that depicted like some landscape and also water ecosystem in Italy from the past. There we had a kind of a super small workshop, and it was an international crowd. So I think people used the images either from Italy or from the Netherlands, they were mixed, to imagine places that were neither in Italy nor in the Netherlands, which I think it's not a bad sign, because I think there are, in each image, for example, there are, except if you have an image of, you know, the Duomo di Milano or like very, very iconic images, there are elements that could, that people could relate to and make their own and bring home. So in other ways, I am a bit ambivalent to see whether one would be more successful to use in a... Yeah.
Have a question? So you're kind of saying that in both workshops, people imagined places that were not actually their own. So in a way, their imagination was also delocalized, in a sense. Like, you could say that the AI archive, or the database upon which an AI is trained, if we don't know where which database it is, where it's located, it's also in a way delocalized.
So to me, is that to put it simply, uh-huh. is for example, when you walk in a city that you don't know, like you go travel and you visit a city, and then suddenly you stop and you look at a corner and you see, okay, this is look exactly like the corner down my street. That's the same process that these people went through, in my opinion, because they were just showcased these images that they were not specified, like, okay, this is Rome, or this is Milan, or this is in the Netherlands, but it was just a glimpse in a landscape that they recognize as home. And to me, it's super interesting that we could use images that are from the Netherlands landscape or Italy to prompt everyone, but it also raises a question, okay, what if actually we used images that are really local with people that live there? But I think that would be another kind of workshop. But I'm not sure if I answered.
No, absolutely. Because also that brings me to the other concept you said at the beginning, belonging, which I found super interesting. Could you expand a little bit more about it, like how do you want to foster belonging, or what is belonging for your workshop?
Well, I can talk a little bit about maybe a project that we did on specifically belonging in the city of Copenhagen. It's called Urban Belonging, and we kind of worked together with anthropologists from the Aalborg University and urban planners from the Gale Institute. And we wanted to kind of invite people from like belonging to or identifying with minorities living in Copenhagen to do this exercise. So the Danish researcher did a really great job in contacting this person through a small organization, for example, LGBTQ plus people who identify as deaf or with physical disabilities or ethnic minorities and so on, through their local organization to invite them in this project where we used the method of photo voice. So we gave them phone with an app that we developed and we asked them to go around the city and take a picture of places they felt were for them or they weren't for them, and just annotate why, and maybe there is a website. Urban belonging. So basically, through the picture they took, we planned a series of workshop where they participated and used the picture as a way to start conversation about what is belonging in the city, why does it matter, where did they felt they belonged, and why. Sorry, this is no, I mean, it's okay. I think it was I really enjoyed the project, and it has a lot, I think, an interesting method to not only include citizens but also use it as a bridge to say to urban planners, hey, you know, this is another way to observe the city and think about for whom are you designing it, and if it's even possible to design a city for everyone, because maybe becomes a city for no one suddenly. I think that kind of was our way in to tackle the senses of belonging now.
I have a question. Do you want to follow up? I mean, it is kind of connected to this, but kind of bridge a bit between all this project we just talked about and also what we are doing in this exact moment. I think this is a conversation we had already in the past. And it's about, I think what we share is to use both collaborative practices, but also, let's say, visual methodologies, right? In that sense, we both experiment with this. But I think for us, and I think for both of us, there is this question of how do you publish all of this? How do you put out in the public all of this? And I think in this sense, I think it's like interesting for the the workshop you're gonna do in few minutes, like and the text that we just saw that is kind of like a report or a narration of, or like a research output as well of the workshop.
Yeah.
This is just to say, like, what are do you encounter challenges? Well, I guess I mean in this we can agree, but also. I think it's a very basic question, like, why do we do this? Like, why do you think this is important? About, you know, like a collaborative practice, a visual methodology, it's like a something that is not just a standard academic research in which you use that, traditional, probably even more comfortable approach.
Yeah, that's a big question and a very important one. To start maybe from the challenges of publishing work like this, I would say maybe the main challenge for me is when to start, when does the publishing process start? Because I have a feeling that, now what I just showed you is kind of a blog post and a reflection that will go maybe on a website and serves maybe also mostly for me to kind of iterate on the process of the workshop and see what worked, what doesn't, and also to share the work with the participants. But I think that a kind of a challenge, what requires a shift in attitude for me is where else should this work be published apart from a research paper? And I think maybe what we've been trying to do is to kind of combine the workshop with immediately an exhibition of the work produced during the workshop in the place they were produced. And then, to kind of also involve participants in it, in the publishing process. And then why, as you say, like the second question was why we do this, right?
Why
we
why do we do this to ourselves?
No. I don't know. Like to me, like why, especially with this theme of climate change and climate anxiety, and try to think about how we might live in the future and how we might live with other species is personally to overcome the feeling of being one. Like this is very a struggle, like why should I be one when we can be more and feel more? And it's more like a gut feeling, this one. And then there is more the applied part. So, okay, I'm from the University, Amsterdam University of Applied Sciences. So all these kind of experiments I'm trying to do with participatory practices and involving people in this imagination processes. We are also try to test the ground where this exercise might be more helpful. Like for example, we did a workshop with high school students for a project called Kike in the Zeespiegel. That was part of a pilot series of classes about sea level rise. And I don't know if you know, but there is a Delta program started in 2010. That will last 150 years, and it's going to be about different scenarios of for the Netherlands of either building higher dams if the water the sea goes up, or allowing the water to take part of the land. And of course, this is a huge speculation exercise, but also involves so many layers. And part of it is okay, but how maybe kids now would leave the effects of this, and how can we help them just get acquainted to the idea of thinking about it? So it's one is very, to summarize, one reason why we do this collectively is one is personal, to do not feeling one, feeling a multitude, and the other one is more applied, like how can be helpful for others.
Thank you so much. I guess that was big answer as well, you did it very well. Do you have something? I could continue.
I could ask more, but
We have. Yes, we have other interviews. We're gonna stay here until 5. But also, I'm trying to find a final question. There is something that I really would like to discuss with you, but I think it's, I don't know. It's no, because I'm seeing these images in front of me.
Yeah.
Do you want to say maybe something about this project that is
the queer of the queer as the ocean?
It's something that is ongoing, right?
And it's this is more like me stepping out of the designer and becoming an artist researcher. That's like I have identity crisis. But finally, like no, but it's a mind shift because as a designer for 10 years, I've been thought okay, remove yourself from the equation and just solve problems. That you have a brief. And so on, and now I'm finally able to be the problem or be with the problem, and this is kind of my own fascination with testing the limits of generative AI in uncovering the concept of merging with the other. So this experiment is a series of images that I generated with Midjourney that kind of, so I really wanted to push the boundaries and blur the boundaries between human and more than human and imagine a fictional moment where in the future there will be, a fashion shoot where finally we'll become one with the ocean. And so part of this is like my fascination to the visual, like the generating images that reflect what I feel, and the other reason is to kind of produce images to think with, both for the imagining what is possible in the future, but also to test these models like. With the topic about biases, but also, can we use models to, to do something queer, even if there is this bias representation, and can you use them to speculate about climate future, even if these models are very impactful, environmentally, but also socially, it's a hidden labor. So that's kind of a, and I think with images, then it becomes easier to also invite others to say, okay, what's happening? Can we do this, or why? When it becomes helpful, and when we should stop instead?
I think this is a perfect note to end this.
Stop.
It's exactly just stop, and now the life goes off. Thank you so much.
Thank you guys. It was a very nice talk to you.
Hope you enjoy the coffee together.
Good luck with the workshop.
Thank you so much.
Is it going to be in half an hour?
In
10 minutes.
What time is it?
It was 10 minutes ago. 2:23.
Okay, yeah, I have to go.
Okay. The workshop is starting.
Where is
there.
Bye.